thanks everybody for coming. I'd like to introduce you to Team USA. I want to read a little piece for you, and then I'm going to introduce some of the individual athletes in front of you here. Thanks to the media, the word athlete is one of the most misunderstood of all the endeavors somebody can undertake as their profession. The majority of people who are asked to describe the attributes of highly successful athletes use words like famous, wealthy, set apart, powerful, perhaps even beautiful. Most people don't know that, in general, these descriptions apply only to a select group of athletes and a select group of sports, not the majority of athletes, nor the majority of sports. In front of you are some of the most elite athletes and competitors, not only in the United States of America, but in the world. This group includes people who have fought for and won the title of world champion, national champion. You have silver medalists, bronze, gold, and all in front of you here. When we began to plan this event, we totaled that this group had 23 podium finishes between them. And if we have our way, that number will get bigger by the end of 2023. Yet, even the world champion in our sport does not earn enough money to pay mortgage, gas, and food. In fact, the world champion in most sports don't. These people are just like the world champions in badminton, bowling, rifle, shotgun, luge, and bobsled. Glory in our sport does not come from moments on the podium. It comes from the internal satisfaction that goes with doing a lot of hard work, knowing that only your personal savior and your Garmin watch know what you're doing. Each athlete in front of you is a runner. After all, it is perhaps the most natural athletic endeavor in the human life sequence. Who needs to tell a two-year-old in a diaper that they need to run around the edge of the swimming pool as fast as they can? They just know to do it. And it's not a result of original sin. It's in fact how God made them. It's how he made you as well. Whether you choose to nurture that, though, is a secondary question we won't bring up. These athletes are all multi-sport athletes. They all swim, bike, run, and probably cross-train with weights, Pilates, yoga, pickleball, and who knows what else. Sure, some of them are marathoners, but all of them assume that in the middle of their event, they're going to change disciplines. I'm a duathlete. I start my event with a run, then I jump on a bicycle and go as hard as I can based on the terrain in front of me, then I put my running shoes back on and do it all over again. Some up here are triathletes, and race day for them starts with a swim, followed by a bike, and then a run. An aqua biker swims in the water and then does a bike ride as hard as they can before their event is over. An aquathlete swims and then immediately puts on running shoes and goes as hard as they can until they hit the finish line. We are what we call the equivalent of housewives of sport. We have a huge list of to-do items and we just freaking do it. Sometimes we complain, other times we look at ourselves and consider ourselves to be epic. Each of us trains in our sport best based on conditions around us. Inclement weather doesn't mean we don't work out. It just means we work out indoors or we change things up. Most of us get up before the crack of dawn and do really hard efforts. Then we shower, eat a whole lot of food, and go to work. Everyone here is dual vocationed. In addition to the title of athlete, we are also financiers at banks, marketing directors, public service workers, photographers. We all eat a lot. Have I mentioned that yet? And when given a chance, we burn a lot of energy, preferably with equal amounts of zest. Today, we all come before you to say that our Savior is Jesus Christ, and his role in our training is inseparable from both who we are and whom we want to be. We offer our bodies as a living sacrifice, as he tells us to do, and he also reminds us that this is true worship. As you will hear, we do life together, we do sport together, and we share life events together. Let me introduce you quickly to everyone. This group is a bit humble, and they won't want me to spend very long on each of them. Alex Goras, student at Arizona State, youth minister and triathlete and ultra runner. Mike Kachuk, financier at Charlotte Water, podium finisher in all distances of duathlon at the national levels. Carolyn Hoover, world silver medalist twice, repeat national champion in multiple sports, and oh, by the way, she's Miss Delaware. I will let her elaborate on that a bit. Aaron McMahon, covert defense contractor, not really. national champion both in equestrian at Auburn University, and she is our current world champion in cross duathlon. Yet, in her heart, she's a teacher. Connor Vogan, banker in Nashville, Tennessee, multi-time podium finisher at nationals in multiple distances. Jordan Weehy, entrepreneur and marketing executive from Colorado, by far the fastest person in our group, and everybody knows it and they want him. He's targeting a podium finish at the World Championships. For most of us, our next event is either the National Championships in Multisport in Dallas, Texas, or the World Championships in Ibiza, Spain. Please welcome Team USA. For our event, I'm going to ask the athletes individual questions that we have partially gone over. At the end, we're going to pass the microphone around and allow you to ask them questions as well. Our first question, you grab a microphone, Carolyn. She's going to go first. Carolyn, the pictures on the screen I will let you use. She's seen them, but it might help her to prompt and look. Anyways, Carolyn, you had an experience very early in your triathlon career, unrelated to athletics, that truly mandated you persevere through adversity. Tell us the story in these pictures.
So if we take it back a little bit to 2020, I'm sure you might be aware of what happened in that year. And around that time, I was a senior at Duke University. I was feeling invincible for many reasons, but the big one was that I was 21 years old, and I had just done my first Ironman, which was a goal I'd had for about 3 weeks before that Ironman. I showed up and I did it. I was like, if I can do that, I can do anything. And then in 2020, I had just been at a conference in Washington, D.C. I'm a big hugger, just like Jeff. And I was hugging a lot of people from Japan, Korea, China. And I went back to school, and about a week and a half later, I was really sick. I went to the emergency room. They said, you don't have flu. You don't have strep. In fact, you look great. You're fine. So I was like, perfect. And then the next day, I fainted from 105-degree fever. And luckily, my sister is a med student, and she picked me up, and she took me to the emergency room. And by that point, I didn't even have enough energy to open my eyelids. And it was a very humbling experience. And at the same time, I still thought I was going to be fine because I had just done an Ironman. So my sister was communicating with the doctors, telling them I was sick. They were like, no, she can go home tonight. I woke up at 2 a.m. to a surgeon looking at me. I had things all over me. And it turned out that I was in savior mode. I had developed a heart murmur because my heart had gone into overdrive to keep me alive. And I had developed a severe case of pneumonia in my lungs overnight, which you can see up there. And it hit me that I couldn't really breathe anymore, which was a very shocking experience because I was used to not being able to breathe from races. And in a psychotic kind of way, I liked that point. I used to love pain because it meant that I was getting better. And this was the first time when pain was crippling to me because I didn't know when it was going to end. And I realized I wasn't strong enough for it. And then from there, it just kept deteriorating. My doctors didn't know what was happening with me. They gave me everything in the book, but nothing was working. And there was one night when I was like, it was the first time that I thought, you know, peace in this situation would be dying. And I was okay with that. Because when you're at that point, when you can't open your eyelids and you can't breathe, you kind of just go through your life. And I had some epic moments. And you remember, it's not just the good, it's the really bad too, but it's those moments where you really felt something. And I was ready. And then at 2 a.m., my parents had driven through the night, and I just saw this little, it looked like a little alien come through the door. It was my mom in full PPE. And she came and held my hand, and then the next day I was miraculously better. And I saw the sun coming through into my hospital room, and it was the first time that I just felt very at peace because I knew if I had made it through that, then I was going to be okay. But it was very shocking to me because I realized is that your strongest points were the most easily breakable, which was a concept I didn't believe because I had just done an Ironman. And then for the next week after that, I spent it with my mom in a hotel room, and we were just really thankful that I was there. And I thought I had made it through the worst part, and then I went on a run the next day, a week after being in this hospital, in this hotel room with my mother, and I fainted on the treadmill in my college gym, and everyone looked at me and they're like, didn't this girl just do an Ironman? She faints on the first tenth of a mile. And it was very shocking because I had heart pains, and then I went to our school's student care center and they said, all of your stats are very concerning. You need to come back. I'm like, I don't need to come back. And the next week, everything shut down, and I didn't go back to a medical center for a year. And in that time, I fainted multiple more times whenever I tried to run, and I couldn't even run a mile. And so I'd gone from in a marathon, in an Ironman, you run a marathon after biking 114 miles and swimming 2 miles, and now I couldn't even just run a mile. And so all the things that I used to take for granted, like breathing, opening my eyelids, and running, all became my greatest gifts. And so I actually met Jeff at the first national championship that I was at when I got back. I was in terrible shape, but I said, you know, if I sign up for all three events, then that will get me better than just doing one, because I'll probably be the worst at all of them, but I'll get better. And luckily for me, there was like no one in my age group in most of them, so I got national champion. but since then, I still I still have to monitor my heart rate. I still, to this day, 3 years later, I still have repercussions from that hospitalization. But I've ran 8 marathons. I've gone 2 silver medals at world championships and multiple national championship titles. And so it's all of those moments. People think it's the medals that you appreciate. They think it's the whole race you appreciate. For me, it's each mile, because it's something that a few years ago I couldn't do.
Thank you. Alex Gora, you have a unique combination of elements that brought you here today, considering you were in Arizona the night before last. Walk us through your life and how you fit together education, ministry, and sport at the same time.
Yeah, so my life has 3 kind of distinct areas. Growing up, distinct areas. For me, that was my education, my career, and my sport, where all of those were things that were given to me, like a motivation, I guess, given to me on why I should do it. And for me, the ultimate motivator was for myself, thinking about educating myself so it can lead to a good career, thinking about doing athletics so that way I can win events, that I can do well, that it's about what I can get out of it. And when I went to college, that kind of motivation was there, part of just by the proximity. I was on the other side of the country. And for me, when that was gone, I didn't really see much of that motivation to keep going, to keep excelling like I had done. And in my past, my most successful moments, my proudest memories, were always when I was doing things for the sake of others. And I can tell more stories on those later. But I never really got that. Like, I looking back now, I see that, but then I didn't really realize that. So in college, just trying to focus on myself, doing athletics for myself, my education for myself, didn't really inspire me to greatness. It inspired me to good enough. Again, another long story that's not for today. I'd love to share later. But really, for me in college, getting to take my faith seriously really changed everything for me in terms of my life, in terms of what I do. And one of the biggest things that changed there was not just having these individual moments where I would care for other people or individual events where I would be doing it for the purpose of others, but instead directing my entire life for the purpose of serving and connecting with others. And the way that really showed up big for the first time in my life was with a friend of mine named Kai. He's a student I met last semester, and he's a student from out of state, didn't really get connected well, talked a little bit about his athletics. And athletics was something I had just recently returned to because God put it on my heart that I had been given these gifts and I had kind of walked away from them because I was just using them selfishly. And I was given a kind of given a vision to say, hey, go back into this. You don't know who you can benefit through these gifts that I had been given. So I invited Kai to go running with me. Something as simple as that, whereas a year before, 2 years before, I would have didn't really do running anymore, wouldn't have really connected with him at all in that way. And because of that gift that I had been given that I was using for other people, I invited Kai to go running with me. I got to share some of my story of faith with him. I got to hear his story. And because of that interaction, I got a chance to share the gospel with Kai and change his life forever. And that's the moment for me when I realized that these areas of my life don't need to be separated. They don't need to be kept for myself. And when I put all of them together for the sake of serving others and caring for others in all things, that's what I was made to do. And just the ability to turn from that state of just living for myself and now living for others, the motivation is always there. And that's a huge driver now in my life.
Cool. You know, I feel like I should give you guys a chance to pause and clap for each of these efforts because they're pretty epic, but we got so many stories. Mike, you have a unique story about perseverance that will probably cause no one here to thoughtfully pursue what you're about to talk about. What an intro, my friend. Tell us about your solo Ironman.
Sure, thank you. So you heard a little bit about Ironman from Carolyn, and just you know, clarify for anyone who's not familiar with that, that mm-hmm. is a triathlon. So you have a 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike, right, followed by a full marathon, 26.2 miles. Normally that's done in a supported context of an event, right? So my story begins really towards the end of 2019. So I'd just done USAT Triathlon Nationals, and just had it that I wanted to do a full Ironman. You know, that's like the next pinnacle, the next objective. And for me at that time, and for my wife, it was like, that's a pretty big investment. You know, I don't know if I want to like shell out the thousands of dollars to do the event, travel, and all that. So it's like, I'm just going to do it on my own, self-supported, right? And so some of you were like, this guy's crazy already. So the months after that, just prepared, obviously not as extreme as Carolyn starting 3 weeks before, but then prepared for it. And then February 8th, 2020, so right before COVID, got the opportunity that, hey, I'm going to do it this weekend. So get up that morning and, you know, go to the local YMCA, hour and a half in the pool. All right. That's your first part. Get back home, get on the bike, go outside. Mind you, it's February, so it's cold, like right around freezing cold. And about an hour into it, you start to see some snowflakes. I'm not kidding. You can look at the weather that day. Start to see some snowflakes. I'm like, there, this is unique. And you know, you're going to be on that bike for about 6 hours. So after a while, it starts to warm up. A little snowflakes turn to slushy, wet stuff. Mind you, it's still in the low 30s. So challenging, to say the least. When I finally finished that, got back to the house, my wife had to help me take my clothes off because I was shaking so bad. I couldn't get my gear off. And I had enough working brain cells at that point to say, I probably need to do this run inside so I can warm up instead of going back out there and doing that. So 2 hours on the treadmill at the gym. And after that, gym closes, and so, oh, you still got to go another 11, 12 miles, buddy. So I go back outside, and it's dark, right? So it's probably around 6, 7 o'clock at night now. It's dark. I'm the only one out there. It's wet, nasty. I'm running out there. You know, I'm in the last probably mile or two, and I'm like, and I'm in the neighborhood doing loops. I'm like, all right, something goes wrong now. At least I'm in the neighborhood. But the agreement that I had with my wife is, right, when I get home, I just want to have pizza. I want a hot pizza waiting for me. And what do you know? I get to see that pizza truck pull out into the neighborhood as I'm finishing this thing up, and I'm like, all right, that's the best motivation I could have, knowing that I can almost touch it. So nevertheless, you finish that up, reach the house, you know, wife greets me, you know, hey, proud of you kind of a thing, everything you asked for right here, right? You know, but kind of, I think this great paradox in that moment that I realized and reflect on is when people do those big events, you know, they're big productions, right? You cross a finish line, there's hundreds of people clapping for you, there's an announcer who's like, hey, Michael Tkachuk, congratulations, you know, you're an Iron Man, or whatever the case is. So there's a lot of fanfare and pomp and circumstance, and there's recognition and glory with it. And I knew I was not getting any of that when I was going to do it myself, but I had it on my heart that this is what I wanted to do, and this is what I wanted to push myself towards. And so I think in some ways, like, this, the idea of persevering, you know, persevering is, you know, it can be in a single event, but it was months of preparation, months of decisions and opportunities where I could say, yeah, I don't feel like working out today. I don't feel like training. But keeping the end goal in mind and saying, if you want to persevere, like, you got to put in the work. You got to try at this. And two, that act of persevering isn't always going to be recognized and met with fanfare and glory. But that doesn't detract away from, you know, the benefit that it brings you and the enrichment that it can bring into your life.
Cool. Thanks, Mike. Jordan, you said earlier in the video that went out to some of these people that nothing is ever as bad as it seems, nor is it as good as it seems. Looking at photos behind you there and all that went with it, follow up with us on that.
So just 2 months after the photo on the right, I found myself in the middle of an MRI right. machine.
The other right.
This one. This photo. Yeah. In Vail, Colorado, in a room that had signed jerseys from Tom Brady, from Patrick Waugh, from Bodie Miller, athletes that you all know who are much more handsome than I am and are far better than I am at their sport and craft because they had all had their knees and hips repaired. I had just qualified for the national team, and I had broken my hip not 2 months later. I'm in the room with these world-renowned surgeons, and they said, Jordan, you're 30 years old. You're never going to walk again. We're going to have surgery, say goodbye to any running or cycling career you have. No more skiing to a Coloradan. That's a dagger in the heart. Yes, Alex, it's true. And I thought, oh, my goodness, what has life become? That there has to be a better way. I'm 30 years old. There's no way that I'm going to want to relearn how to walk as a 30-year-old. I was able to find some alternative treatments, looking for other ways to go about repairing my broken hip. Luckily, I found, and the Lord pointed me to, some alternative magnetic therapy. And just 6 months later, in the other picture, I finished at the World Championships wearing a Team USA kit along with some of the people here on this panel. The lesson for me is when you're on the top of the mountain, have enough humility to admit that you're not going to be there forever. And when you're in the valley, know that the Lord has his eyes on you there too, and he'll pull you out.
Well, awesome. Thanks, Jordan. Connor, yours is for certain the most heartfelt for me. Although you're here because of your being an athlete, you're going to tell us a story related to specifically your marriage.
Yeah, I got married in July of 2019, and my wife is not a U.S. citizen. She's from the Dominican Republic. And a lot of people think when you marry a foreigner, they just automatically get citizenship. And what I had to explain to a lot of people is, no, there's a full green card process. It's very expensive. There's a lot of paperwork. So about a month after we got married, we submitted all of her paperwork. And it typically takes about 6 to 10 months. So August of 2019, everything gets submitted. And we're like, all right, we got this. 6 to 10 months, we'll do our first year married apart. But we know there's an end date. We know this process works quickly, so we can do it. And if you're thinking about that timeline, you're probably like, COVID's right around the corner. And in March 2020, the only thing we had left was her green card visa interview at the U.S. Embassy in the Dominican Republic. And I had just gotten back from visiting her for the last time before she was going to have her interview. We were so excited, and the world shut down 2 days after I got back to the U.S. And we went from being so ready to start our new lives together. I had moved to Charlotte during that season of being married apart, and just with all this excitement to finally be together, and we went to the very opposite end of that spectrum of, I have no idea when I'm going to see you again. And it took another year and a half after that for her process to finally finish. So we did our first 2 years of marriage apart, and it was very, very challenging because, especially having just moved to Charlotte, I was so alone in that season of my life. So excited to finally be with my wife, and not only do I not have her, and I have no idea when I'll see her again, but I have no one else. And it was exactly in that season that I met most of the people here at this table. And so for me, the lesson of perseverance that God put in my life is, or that God taught me, is that he will put people in your life to get you through it. But we are not meant to get through seasons of hardship and loneliness alone. We are communal creatures. God loves us in community, and I'm so grateful that he put these amazing people in my life to help me persevere.
Wow. Aaron, you had an experience very early in your mountain biking career that made you nearly ditch the whole sport. Tell us that story. Oh, by the way, she's the world champion.
Absolutely, that's true. So how many of you guys know the three types of fun? Three types? Nope. Okay, so let's just say fun doesn't have to be fun to be fun. Snake Creek Gap, which is a mountain bike race in Dalton, Georgia, is the definition of type 3 fun. It's not fun to think about beforehand, right? You're dreading that you've signed up for this thing. Why would I do this to myself? It's not fun while you're doing it at all. And it's really not fun to reminisce on or like look at pictures and go, wow, that was a great no. Nothing about it is fun. So that's type 3 fun. I signed up for this race.
Everybody's inspired.
<Let's go. laughs> I signed up for this race. I had been mountain biking for maybe a year at that point. And there are two distance options. You could do 17 miles, but you don't get a belt buckle for that. So why would you do that? I signed up for the 34-mile version. No big deal, right? Sure. I wound up with a stress fracture in my foot and was wearing one of those air casts and the flu about a month before that. I'd gotten over the flu, though, right? Mostly. I still didn't have any lung capacity whatsoever. That's okay. I show up to packet pickup with the air cast on my foot, and they're like, oh, cool, you're picking up for somebody. Who? I was like, yeah, me. They looked at me, well, you're a special kind of crazy. It's true. So I start out, but I'd gotten permission from my doctor, right? Can I still ride my bike? Oh, yeah, of course you can still ride your bike. That shouldn't hurt your foot. One of the hardest races in the Southeast, you guys, all right? I'm walking my bike as much as I'm riding my bike. It's probably not the best thing for my foot. It's fine. There are a couple of events during that race. First of all, it takes place in January in Northwest Georgia. It did not leave the teens all day. 17 degrees was the high, and that's the actual temperature, not real fuel. So I had all of my nutrition, being a newbie mountain biker, in a water bottle in my bottle cage. It froze before the race started and never unfroze. Right? So I'm out there, this 34-mile race that most people were completing in, I don't know, 4.5, 5 hours maybe. It took me 8.5 hours to finish. 8.5. I get up on a ridgeline at one point, and I lean against a tree after having walked the last 2 miles, because it's just baby head boulders everywhere you look. And I'm leaning against a tree going, you know, God, if I threw my bike over the side of this cliff right now, I would never have to ride a bike ever again. That'd be it. I'd be done. I would never have to do this sport ever again. And then a voice of reason slash the voice of God tells me, yeah, but you still got to get off this mountain somehow. No one's coming for you. They've shut down the finish line by now, surely, right? They mostly had by the time I got back. Somebody had saved me a beer. It was the saving grace. So with that in mind, I get back on my bike, and right towards the end of this last bit of 34 miles, you reach a cell tower. And after that cell tower, it is a straight road descent. You're back on a road, and then you just ride back into the finish line area. I got to that cell tower and just started crying. Like, oh, I'm almost there. The end is in sight. I finish. Sure enough, they had mostly packed up the finish area. There's not that big crowd waiting for you, even if you're finishing a race that late after everybody else has finished. I guarantee it. But you're done, and you don't want to talk about it. You really don't. It's not fun. But here I am telling you about it, and I'm laughing about it, right? Because special kind of crazy. And so you go back out, and I've signed up for it multiple times since then. Why do you do that? Because after you've finished something like that, anything else you do for the rest of the year, you've already done the hardest thing you will do all year that season in January. So at that point, sure, why not? You know, I can do the stupid hard thing and have no fun doing any of it. And from there on out, anything else I do is just fun, right? Actual fun, type one fun. The kind that's like eating cake or ice cream kind of fun, right? So that's my story. Yeah, you go from wanting to never ride a bike again to realizing, okay, but if I could survive that, I can survive any of these other races, and that's kind of what you end up doing. Jordan laughs about how hard the mountain biking was in Romania.
So hard.
And I'm like, huh, no, that was fun. That was actually fun. You don't understand.
Cool.
So that's,
thank
that's
you,
my
Erin.
Story.
So mine is, my story has a little bit more in common with Erin's than perhaps anybody else's. So this is me at competing at my second world championship. The first world championship I prepared for, I was pretty scared. I certainly wasn't as fast as the best athletes from other countries. And I had a neuroma in my foot, which means I couldn't run as hard as I needed to. I knew the pace I needed to run, and I was a minute per mile below that. So there were 68 people in my category at the race start, and the course were in Spain. And the guy says, ready, set, go in Spanish. However, they say that. I think it's ready, set, go. if I translate it over from Spanish to English, right? So the race takes off, and about a minute into the race, I'm in last place. So there's 68 out of 68. I turn around, and behind me is the motorcycle with the videographer and the race official saying, come on. he doesn't say anything. But I realized that that's it. For me, that crossover moment was a parallel to Aaron's. I can quit and feel no shame saying I trained hard and I prepared for the world championship, but why finish a race if you're the worst? You know, that was the temptation there. But I knew that that was not okay. It certainly wasn't what my God did. I can come up with lots of why not to's, but the why to was real in that moment. Instead, I decided I'm going to pick somebody off, and his name happened to be Fernandez, and he was from Spain. He was the next athlete in front of me. So if you guys know anything about knobs on your stereo, they go from 1 to 10. I decided, let's go to 11. And so I said, let's go to 11 until I can get ahead of Fernandez. And so I did, and now I'm in 67th place. I can do anything. Peter can walk on water. I can do anything. So the next guy in front of me was an Italian. I thought his name, I don't know his name. Was it lasagna, spaghetti, vermicelli? I don't know. He had a beautiful uniform, prettier than our national team uniforms for sure. And I got ahead of him, and I said, I'm in 66th. And I just kept that up for 2 hours and change, passing people and going as hard as I can, thinking, wearing the little thing on your eyes, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Or I can do all things as long as the guy in front of me slows down just this much, whichever comes first, right? And when I slipped into the, I'm going to call it the last quarter mile or so, you enter the stadium, and all these world championships in general, they like to finish you in a place where you can hear crowds screaming and videographers stuff. So I enter a stadium, and the national champion of South Africa is in front of me. I don't know if this is an indictment against South African athletes or the fact that I was just feeling it and my endurance was working, but I said, I'm going to beat him. I'm going to beat the champion of South Africa. So you can actually draft somebody running if you get really close like that. And so when we made to that final turn, I turned my knob back up to 11. And I went by him to beat him so I could cross the finish line. I finished 53rd out of 68. The next year, the one that you see here, I got 10th. I'm much more proud of that 53 than I am of this 10. Because this 10 is a very fit Jeff who didn't have a foot issue. The other one was hurting and having to rely upon everything. I mean, every breath I took was coming from the Lord in that moment. And then I became addicted to the sport, because when I turned around to congratulate him for a good race, he F-bombed me and called me an effing yank. That was it. I was addicted. I was sold. I love this sport. I was all in. So these guys, one of the things you do at a world championship, you do it in Olympics that never makes it on TV, is you generally trade with athletes from other countries, right? So we all have, you know, Carolyn's won so much, she's probably got uniforms from the people from Alpha Centauri she's traded with, right? But we trade, these guys got South African stuff. When they were showing me their South, wasn't that right, Southern? Yeah. They were showing me their South African stuff, I just keep thinking, effin' yank, effin' yank, because that's my South African athlete story that goes with it. So for me, perseverance was not quitting in the heart of the event. Most of us go into life and we quit long before we hit the finish line, right? You know, businesses, you go into a market share and you say, if I'm not number one or number two, I'm going to get out of market. Instead of trying to figure out why you're not the top in the marketplace, you spin off that division of your company. You just say, I quit, I'm not going to do it anymore. Athletes have a tendency to do the same thing. If they're not successful competitive, they're not starting, they're on the third string, they'll generally consider either another sport or moving on in their life. In the middle of an event, you have to sometimes do that as well. I wanted to do that. So that's my micro story for you guys. So a few people have second stories, and then we'll be tying things up, and we're going to leave the microphones open for you guys to ask us some questions. So, Carolyn, social media for you is a real thing. You've definitely taken the time to develop it. Talk us through why that's important to you and what it means to you.
Mm-hmm. I'm an investment banker by trade, and the definition of that is that you don't have another life. And I, when I was an intern, I was 19 years old, and my boss and I were getting coffee, and he looked at me, and he's like, if you want to be a banker, you can't have any other passions. And if you can tell by the fact that the sport I do is multiple sports in one, like, I like doing a lot of things. But I still went into that industry, and I worked the 100-hour work weeks, and I realized it was another situation where I had other people telling me who I needed to be and to define me in a certain way. I'm also Japanese American, so it's the same thing. Everyone always has an opinion about who you are, where you should be, and what you are. And so with social media, it was the first time where I could really say, you know what? I don't have to choose. I'm all of these things, and that's what Carolyn is. So what's really special to me is that on social media, you can build your personal brand, and you can also make a living off of being yourself, which is something that I find very empowering, and so that's what I do now. But as I was telling Jeff, it's one of those situations where a lot of people don't really know what it is, and it exactly comes down to the point of, in a world where everyone tells you who you are, all that matters is being yourself. And so that's something what I love about our sport too, is that you do multiple things, but when it comes down to it, you're a multi-sport athlete, and that's where you can meet the people who empower you. And I think that's a God-given gift and something that we can all celebrate.
Thank you. So this is rad. This is a spontaneous one, and it just came to us last night. So Alex, tell everybody what you've done this last month.
Yeah, so definitely tied into kind of the back end of that story where I had this moment where I realized this is what I wanted to do. What that looked like for me is using my gifts that I had growing up and just like I said, using them for other people. So I've since, out at Arizona State, I've joined the triathlon team out there with not the purpose of necessarily being the best athlete on the team. There's crazy gifted people out there, and I'm not one of them. But just going and being a part of the team for the sake of using my gifts and using my story to impact people. So in the last month, I've done races in San Diego and others in Arizona. But all through the midst of that, I am in my last semester of engineering writing my thesis. And those are not usually things that you can take too much time away from right at the end. Oh, by the way, in the middle of that, I took an entire week off leading a team of missionaries up to University of Las Vegas to reach college students. And adding any one of those kind of components two together would be a really, really tough schedule. And I've been through all three of those in the last month. And there's been sleep that's been sacrificed, I'll say that. But the ability to, just like I said before, just being able to do things for the sake of other people just continues to shine through in my life. Being able to equip some of my teammates up at University of Las Vegas to just go and reach college students, encouraging my teammates mid-race, talking to my teammates about their story, about my story in car rides, sharing with people and even connecting with people in my lab and my classes because of all the shared struggles that we all go through. Just the overwhelming thing that's connecting all three of those fields for me just is my focus on Christ and on sharing the gospel with other people. And through all of that stuff, I'm not saying that, oh, I did all of these things because of how strong I am. I'm saying I did all of these things because I know the reason why I'm doing it. And that's just continued to shine through in my life and what I want to continue to keep going, doing, moving forward, just persevering just for the sake of how I can serve other people.
Cool.
Yeah. Excellent. Had a busy month. Now I'm here.
And oh, by the way, you're on the East Coast for 48 hours, but that didn't get... Mike. Matthew 6:33 is your formula to how to deal with the fact that you're an executive at Charlotte Water and you're an athlete and you're a married guy. Walk us through that whole thing to you.
Yeah, so I think to kind of pivot a little bit on that question, to me it really comes down to priorities. You know, we make time for the things that we see as priorities in life. And I bring up this verse, Matthew 6:33, that is, you know, seek first the kingdom of God and all else will be added. All else will be taken care of. And so that, first and foremost, priority number one, right? Your relationship with God, your time with God, that vertical relationship has to be first. Stepping off of that, then you have your relationships with others, right? Spouse, friends, family, whatever the case may be, you know, in your circumstance. Getting that second, then going into things like maybe your vocation, right? How do you make a living? How do you sustain yourself and whatnot? And then we finally get into that realm of what are my hobbies? What are the things that I chase kind of in that you know, tier of my life? And that's really where, for me, that's where the whole athletics lives, right? So it's a little bit down the list. And so what that does in particular is it creates clarity of purpose, right? Creates focus. Like, I know what I need to make time for, and I know the order I'm going to do it, and what I have left. It's precious. That time is precious. There's only 24 hours, and I need to choose how I'm divvying that up. So practically speaking, how does that look like? Typically, probably Monday through Friday, it's getting up early, right? Before the sun's up. Jeff, you brought that up in the intro. Getting a workout in, all right? Then going off to work from there. After I'm done with that, it's usually a second workout in the afternoon. One thing I'm tremendously blessed with is a wife who also enjoys doing a lot of these things as well. So we actually share in that passion. So she's getting off of work and I'm getting off of work, and we're both able to do something like that together, right, and share in that joy. And then, you know, as the evening's winding down, we do share a meal with each other every night, invest in each other, invest in our relationship, conversation, perhaps doing a couple's devotional or study together. And then also, you know, finding time to, you know, invest in my own personal spiritual time, whether it's in prayer, whether it's, again, just in the Word or whatnot. And that really comprises a very typical work week. You know, weekends are much more flexible, you know, with capacity and whatnot. But also, I think just to add to that, I think there's also the element that I, with two of the guys on the panel here, we have a weekly Bible study, right? And that's just foundational to our relationship and growing in faith together, right?
Cool. Thanks, Mike. Jordan, yours is the last story up here.
Okay.
So you're one of the majority stockholders in a corporation with lots of employees and a lot of stuff going on. Certainly for you, there are moments when you are utterly overwhelmed by the idea of preparing for and trying to win a world championship. And oh, by the way, there's 15 employees and a couple of $10 million of revenue you're responsible for. Talk us through those moments when that's overwhelming.
Oof. Can you hear this? Yes. Oof. Yeah. Very similar to you being 68th place. There's a million reasons to give up and to not keep going. One thing that's interesting about my work, just to lay a little bit of a landscape, we are a rural internet service provider, and we have the most competitive broadband market in North America with 9 different internet options. How many of you have 2 internet options? Yeah, exactly. But you probably wish you did sometimes, right? That usually gets a laugh in the tech crowd. Okay. In reality, it's this. It's understanding that even if you don't want to go to work that day or get your workout in, it's not giving up, not stopping. The momentum on aggregate is stronger than any inertia. Showing up when you don't need to and just moving a little bit faster or taking that extra step, right, Jeff?
Mm-hmm.
That can move you forward.
Cool. Thanks, Jordan. So we've intentionally kind of stopped at that point. Most people never get a chance to actually ask a real question of an athlete outside of a TV camera running, especially a world-class one. So we have mics, and Travis has said he'll carry around. If anybody would like to ask anybody any questions, please do. We got one in the back. Travis, first one.
You all are obviously very accomplished people in your fields, investment bankers, you know, whatever here. But you've gone through a lot of trials and tribulations too, both with your athletics and personal life. So what I would like to hear from each one of you, first your age, and second the name, if there was a person who inspired you, just the first name, of this person to kind of model the behavior of perseverance that was personal to you.
I'm 29, and it feels cheesy to say, but Jeff.
I'm 30, and my grandfather, who's a Holocaust survivor.
I'm 24, and my grandmother and grandfather, who are in Japanese-American internment camps.
I'm 37, and Grace Ragland, who was an inspirational mountain biker with multiple sclerosis, who managed to do very impressive things.
I'm 22, and my former scoutmaster.
31, and it was similar to Alex. I was a scoutmaster.
Thank you guys all for taking the time to be here today. My name is Pierre Wooten, and my question is, the Word of God tells us obedience is better than sacrifice. But I have a question of, tell me about a time, anyone or two, where sacrifice actually superseded the obedience.
So, yeah, this kind of ties into the last month that I've been living with working on my thesis, with working on different stuff ministry related. And I had a triathlon last weekend that I had signed up for in the past before I knew the nightmare that would be the month of March for me. And I was very much in the mindset of, like, there's no way I can go on this weekend. Like, I just don't have the time. I haven't trained enough well for it. I need to focus on other stuff. And the reason that I went on that trip was, it was kind of simple. They sent out, like, the car assignments for who was going to be going. And I saw that I was going to be in a car with me and one of the freshman guys that I've really been reaching out to a lot, that I've really had one looking for a chance to really share my story, share my testimony with him. And I definitely had to make the sacrifice of, like, all right, this weekend would be really valuable to getting my work done. But I see an opportunity to have some really quality one-on-one time with somebody I've been looking for quality one-on-one time with. And the sacrifice definitely showed up on the back end of that. I was up till 4 or 5 in the morning most nights last week because of that. But I got a really great chance to connect with him. And then even just in the athletics world, just helping. I've just been blessed with my experience in triathlon, just getting to help a lot of the people who are new on the team, even with just practical stuff, like teaching them how to set up their transition area, helping them think through their nutrition, their pacing. And the fact that I was get to be there to pour into people on a practical level, but as well as like on a spiritual level and on a level of encouragement that wouldn't have been there if I would have just looked at how I could manage my weekend and best manage my time. Sacrificing that for the sake of helping other people.